material sense gratification and mukti. They're both like witches. Even those four types of kanishta adhikaris, if they're not careful, they may fall down through bhukti or mukti. Bhukti in the case of the first two, the distressed and the desire of wealth. Mukti in the case of the one who's looking for knowledge of the absolute, or both in the case of the one who's curious. Now in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is discussing in the seventh chapter about those four types of people, Krishna makes the point that of the fourth is the best. The one who's really searching for knowledge of the absolute. So, in other words, the first two, who are on the material level, interested in their distress and getting money, they have to become elevated to the level of the third type, the curious type. In other words, they have to get free of their real attachments to bhukti, at least to some extent, to become a little curious. And then all three of those types, those two plus the curious, they have to come to the level of the fourth type if they're really to succeed. And even when they're level on the level of the fourth type, they have to watch out for the attraction to mukti. So what does that indicate? I mean, you could say it indicates a few things, but one thing is that the danger of mukti is greater than the danger of bhukti. So both bhukti and mukti, they're both witches. But mukti is the most dangerous. Do you follow the idea? I hope you follow the idea. In other words, bhukti is given up on a lower level than mukti is given up. Because mukti, it implies philosophy and spiritual concepts like that. Whereas bhukti, sense gratification, is simply mundane. And it's not hard for someone who's interested in spiritual life to see it as being detrimental. But mukti is more subtle. So of the two witches, mukti is the more dangerous. And therefore, the next chapter is devoted to discussing mukti. And then the chapter after it, which is somewhat shorter, is more discussing about bhukti. Anyway, that you're going to summarize those two chapters over the next few days. So you'll see all that. So this is what is being discussed here. Eligibility of devotional service. And different levels of devotees in devotional service, different types of people and different levels of people who may take to devotional service, and what are the main dangers which oppose your eligibility, which may make you fall from devotional service or not allow you to really become absorbed in it. Any comments or questions?
How rare the Madhya Mandari?
How what?
How rare.
Oh, how rare. Well, Prabhupada says in Nectar of Instruction that when a person gets second initiation, that generally they should be accepted as Madhyamadhikaris. Now that doesn't mean like it's a rubber stamp. You take second initiation, then automatically you must be accepted as a Madhyamadhikari. But the point is that those people who are deciding who should receive second initiation, they should use their discrimination to try and see has this person come to the level of being, you know, like basically Majjhima Adhikari. So in those terms, Majjhima Adhikaris of a type wouldn't be so rare. Of course, there's Majjhima Adhikaris and Majjhima Adhikaris. You know, Majjhima Adhikari may also be very advanced. Majjhima Adhikari, there's at the beginning of chapter 17, if I'm not mistaken. Somewhere. 17. In the first paragraph of chapter 17. Chapter 17 is discussing ecstatic love or bhava bhakti. And Prabhupada's describing how elevated such a devotee is. Only at that time of bhava bhakti is the attachment to Krishna perfect. Spontaneously the devotee becomes eager to serve the Lord in bhava, in ecstatic love. At this stage the devotee is on the level of uttama adhikari. So one who's on the level of bhava is definitely uttama adhikari. And uttama adhikari, a person may be uttama adhikari on like the level of a sakti or, you know, although on the level of bhava they're most definitely uttama adhikari. So you can apply this concept of majjhima adhikari to someone at least on the level of nishta, ruchi, asakti, then, you know, there's like transitional period, certainly. So also a very qualified majjhima adhikari means a very advanced devotee. Very advanced. But then there are different levels. In very simple terms, a person who's qualified for second initiation could be accepted as basically a majjhima adhikari. Yes, Kanishtha adhikari can also be a pure devotee. In fact, I was just reading that this morning. I was looking up references. I was going to bring it, the reference actually. But a Kanishtha adhikari can be a pure devotee. If he's fixed in his conviction about Krishna, he may know nothing about the devotees. But if he is fixed on Krishna, then he can be a pure devotee. Like Dhruva Maharaj. We didn't go in detail through the description of the four types of Kanishtas. But Dhruva Maharaj is one of them. Dhruva Maharaj is the Kanishta who is who's desiring material benefit or wealth. So all he was interested in was God. Narada Muni, his own spiritual master, I mean, as it worked out, but Narada Muni, such an elevated devotee, came and gave good advice. Dhruva said, no, I don't want to hear about it. I've made up my mind. So in other words, he didn't have that appreciation for the devotees. But he was so fixed on Krishna that he's a pure devotee. So Kanishtha adhikari can be a pure devotee, but it's definitely rare. And because they're so fixed, they'll very quickly advance and come up to higher levels. Now what about our test? Oh no! Don't tell me we ran out of time. What a disaster. Gosh. Okay, we'll do it next week. And we'll do it at the beginning. And we will do it. So if you're not prepared, then please be warned that you'll miss out on the marks. Actually. And that's just a shame. Srila Prabhupada ki.
This fan on very soon. Not making any noise, but it's not blowing too much air on you all. Okay, so now we have some verse sheets for the chapter or chapters that we're going to do today. These can be given out to the Matajis, and these for the men. And if you wrote the assignment over these days we had off, then you could bring it up now, please. What has happened to our devotees? Have we scared them off? No, together. Together's fine, yeah. Just whatever assignments you've got there. Even if some of you didn't write the previous assignment, I noticed that one or two of you didn't, but if you did it later, and if you have it there, then you can hand it in also. So just any assignments that you may have.
Okay, thank you.
So the first thing we're going to do today is, thank you. First thing we're going to do is write out those verses you remember. I hope you remember to learn them. So those three verses, if by any chance any of you didn't learn them, I hope you did. Even if you don't know them well, just try. But if you really didn't learn them at all, then just read chapter 4 and chapter 5. And we'll give you about, how long should we give you? 15 minutes? 10 minutes? Just to write those three verses. 15 minutes, all right. Okay. So, without looking at the verses, if you would be good enough to please write them out. Hopefully you know which verses I'm referring to. And as I say, if you really didn't learn them somehow or other, then just read. Don't go away, just read chapter 4, which we're going to be discussing in 15 minutes. Chapter 4. Even if you only know one or two of the three verses, they're three. The first one was the definition of pure devotional service. Then sadhana bhakti and vairi bhakti, right? So even if you only know one or two, then just write those out. And even if you only half know, then write out whatever you know. Yeah. Word for word, you mean? No. Just the actual verse itself and the translation. Sorry? Oh yeah, those three verses. Thank you. And don't worry too much if you don't know the spelling so precisely. You don't need to worry about the diacritical marks, the accents. As long as we can see that you've got the basic idea, as far as the Sanskrit's concerned. And with the translation also, try and make it as precise as you can, but the main thing we want to see is that you've got the basic idea. Can you just give us a rub? Nana Shastra Vachara Nai Kanipano Sadharama Samstapako Loka Nam Hitakara No Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo Radha Krishna Dara Vinda Bhajana Nandena Mata Liko Vande Rupa Sanatano Ragujago Sri Jiva Gopalako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, for very expert and scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they're honored all over the three worlds, and they're worth taking shelter of because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Shri Shad Goswami Prabhu Ki Jai. So last Monday, we went through chapter 3 about the eligibilities. We discussed about the three levels of devotees. First class, second class, and third class, Uttama, Madhyama, and Kanishta. And we saw how their positions could be understood in terms of two particular symptoms, two particular features. One of the Matajis can tell us what are those two particular symptoms or features which mark the different levels of devotees? That they have more or less of two different things. Yeah. And men?
Knowledge.
Yeah. So, Uttama, Madhyama, and Kanishta, at least in terms of the description in chapter 3, of course there's also more to it than that, but in those terms, there are different degrees of faith and different degrees, different amounts of knowledge were taken to be like the main distinguishing features between these three grades. So the Uttama was very, very knowledgeable, able to understand everything and explain everything in terms of scripture, in an authoritative and complete way. And of course, he also has unbreakable faith. In this way, he's come to the point of being maturely situated in devotional service. Then the Madhyam doesn't have so much knowledge. So sometimes the Madhyam will, when meeting some opposing elements, someone with some other ideas, the Madhyam will not always be able to immediately give authoritative answers to questions and give all information just on the spot, immediately. But despite that, despite not being so knowledgeable, the faith of the Madhyam is not affected at all. And the Madhyam remains fixed in the conviction that Krishna is God and I'm his servant and my only business is to engage in his, in Krishna's service, despite the fact that sometimes the Madhyam isn't able to just readily give some clear answer to refute some opposing argument. Then the Kanishta is having even less knowledge, very little knowledge. And particularly, we know the Kanishta recognizes Krishna, but doesn't really recognize anything else. Doesn't recognize the devotees, doesn't really understand about the material nature and how difficult, what are the pitfalls of Maya. And the Kanishta also doesn't have much faith. So when meeting some opposing arguments, even we mentioned perhaps that same person that the Madhyam met and the Madhyam was not able to refute all the arguments, but was not affected in terms of faith. So if a Kanishta meets the same opposing person, certainly the Kanishta won't be able to deal with the arguments, obviously. But the Kanishta also is very much in danger of losing his or her faith and actually changing their opinion that I may be doing the wrong thing. Maybe I should adopt the process which this opposing person is putting forward. In this way, they may leave Krishna consciousness and take up something else. They may just become materialists, or they may even take up some other type of spiritual process, possibly. Then there was also a description of four types of Kanishtas, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and the person who's really searching for knowledge of the Absolute. So there are four types of Kanishtas. And we made the point that what they are up against is basically bhukti and mukti. Therefore, they're on that very low level, they're just Kanishtas like that. Because they're affected by bhukti and mukti. And particularly the first two, the distressed and the desire of wealth, they're particularly affected by bhukti. Whereas the third category, the curious, inquisitive person, is likely to be affected by both, some bhukti and some inclination towards mukti. Whereas the last category, which in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says is the best of the four, the person who's really searching for knowledge of the Absolute, such a person is more affected by mukti and not so much by bhukti or sense gratification. So then we made the point that the first two have to come to the level of the third, and then all three of them have to come to the level of the fourth, and then they all have to become Krishna conscious from that platform if they're to really become Krishna conscious and avoid falling down like that. So then we read one verse, which we gave you, I think, on that last lot of verses, at least from last week. Not the ones that we just gave you right now, but from last week, which was talking about bhukti and mukti being like witches. And witches are famous for, or here you might say, what, a muti man or something, a backdoor temple person. Anyway, these people are famous for somehow influencing your thinking due to some sort of subtle influence. Your thinking becomes affected and you start thinking wrongly. So if you become influenced by these two witches, Bhukti and Mukti, then you'll start thinking wrongly. And you'll be trying to practice devotional service, but your devotional service will be contaminated and you may fall down. Certainly you won't experience the ecstasy, the bliss of being absorbed nicely in devotional service. So these are two witches, and we referred back to the well-known verse, the definition of pure devotional service, which you just wrote out, Anyabhilashita Shunyam, which says that we're facing three problems, karma, jnana, and anyabhilash. So bhukti and mukti is essentially covering these three things, which are the obstacles to pure devotional service. So now, let's see. Even the point is there that of these two witches, mukti is the worst, most dangerous. And we tried to illustrate that by making the point that of those four kanishtas, the two who are on the lowest level are affected by bhukti. They have to become free from that, or at least start becoming free from that, to come to the level of the inquisitive person who's affected by both bhukti and mukti. And then all three have to become completely free from bhukti and come to the level of the fourth who's affected by mukti. And then they all have to become free from that and really become attached to Krishna. So it appears from that mukti is affecting people who are more advanced than those people who are affected by bhukti. You follow the idea there? Yeah. So of the two, mukti is really the worst. So this brings us then to chapter 4. And it also brings us to chapter 5. These two chapters are together very much. Chapter 4 is devotional service surpasses all liberation. And chapter 5 is explaining the purity of devotional service. So you've been through both these chapters now and written summaries. So probably you would have noticed that chapter 4, even though it's titled Devotional Service Surpasses All Liberation, it's also making the point on quite a number of occasions by quoting verses. It's also making the point that devotional service surpasses bhukti. In other words, it's not only talking about how it surpasses mukti, although that may be the main theme perhaps, but actually it's discussing both. And then chapter 5, That is actually more focusing on the bhukti side, or the side of how devotional service is better than materialism of any sort, be it ritualistic or just gross materialism. Anyway, so the point is that chapters 4 and 5 are discussing how devotional service surpasses bhukti and mukti, both of them. Ends of ears. This is a very nice verse. Very advanced level of devotional service. We sometime in the earlier classes, when we were talking about the difference, the basic differences between Raganuga and Vaidisadhana Bhaktis, we read that one conversation of Srila Prabhupada's, you may remember. He was talking about quality of chanting. He was saying that quality of chanting means you'll just go on and on and on. Not just because you have to do 16 rounds. You may remember Prabhupada said that we say you do 16 rounds. If you don't, then you get out. So it's very much like rule. You must do it. So we know, well, I must do it. So therefore we do it. Hopefully we all chant 16 rounds. But someone who's on that level, advanced level, then they just chant and chant and chant. And it's not a matter of 16 rounds or any number. So Prithu Maharaj is certainly on that level. So he's praying. He's not praying that, please don't let me fall asleep in class again, as usual. Please let me at least stay awake so I don't make a fool of myself. He's not praying like that. We may have to pray like that. But he's praying, let me have more ears and tongues so I can do more of this hearing and chanting. So in this way, devotional service is being distinguished from liberation, that it surpasses in this way. Then, down the bottom of the page, this is now more related to bhakti than mukti. There's a description of Bharat Maharaj, that when the time came for him to leave home, then he just left. He just walked out and he was gone. He wasn't sitting around debating in his mind, should I, can I, you know, what's going to happen to my family and what's going to happen to me. And no, he just got up and he was gone. So he wasn't attached to his family, his opulence, his royal position and all that. So in this way, devotional service is being distinguished from bhakti, actually. Even though the chapter is referring more to how devotional service is surpassing mukti, but that particular verse is more regarding the bhakti side. But then if you turn over the page, right at the very top of page 38, then there's a quote. Shukadev Goswami again is praising the same person, Bharat Maharaj, and he's saying that he was also not concerned about mukti. Then the next paragraph, the Bhagavatam 6.11.25, Vritrasura. Vritrasura wasn't attached to either bhakti or mukti. So in different ways, all these verses are making different points, or establishing this point in different ways. The next paragraph is how the devotees are not afraid of anything because of devotional service. The following paragraph, there's a similar statement by Indra. This is explaining how devotional service is our real self-interest. Anyway, we're not going to go through all the verses. There's lots of verses. But basically the point is that in different ways, the fact that devotional service surpasses liberation and sense gratification, in different ways, this point is being established. Then, if you turn over to page 40, this now, in the second paragraph there, there's reference to five types of liberation. And we've given you the verse, actually, on the sheet that we handed out. We've given you this verse. How there are five types of liberation. Now, the devotees may accept four, but they won't accept the fifth. The fifth is the first one which appears here, to be one with Krishna. The other four, the devotee may accept, but only if Krishna wants. Anyway, we're going to discuss more about that as we go on. But you could just bear in mind that there are five types of liberation. Four may be accepted by devotees, but only if Krishna wants. And if Krishna doesn't want, then a pure devotee will not accept those four. If Krishna doesn't want the devotee to live on the same planet, then the devotee will accept, all right, I'll live somewhere else. Like when you go back to Godhead, when or if we go back to Godhead, there you may be in Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna may say to you, I'd like you to come back to Chatsworth and be born in a devotee family at Radharadhanath Temple, be brought up there, and preach. So, the pure devotee will say, yes, all right. Pure devotee will not say that I just got out of the material world. Radharadhanath temple is okay, but some of the devotees get on my nerves sometimes. We all know these things happen sometimes. Whereas when you've gone back to Godhead, things are very nice. No one will get on your case. Everyone's very friendly and considerate. And so on. There's no rumors, or there's certainly no cause for rumors. So the devotee, pure devotee, even if the devotee has achieved residence on Krishna's planet, but if Krishna wants, the devotee will leave Krishna's planet and go and do some special service for Krishna elsewhere. Or to have opulences like Krishna. This is more referring to Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, the opulences of the Lord are very prominently manifested. He himself is living in a very grand setting, huge palace. Everything is decorated with jewels and so on. So the opulence is very obviously manifest. So when the devotees are living in Vaikuntha, they are living with the same opulence. But if Krishna wants them to not have that opulence, then a pure devotee will certainly agree to live in any condition, even a very simple condition. Then possess bodily features similar to Krishna. This refers to Vaikuntha. There, so many of the devotees have forearms, and you can't even distinguish them from Lord Narayan, except for one thing. Who knows that one thing? Bankim Roy? Anyone? What's that one distinguishing feature? Yeah, a little tuft of hair that the Lord has on the chest, which is Sri Vatsa, a form actually of Lakshmi Devi. Otherwise, the devotees generally, at least the male devotees, they're identical with Lord Narayan. We're going to discuss a little bit maybe about the story of Gopikumar. Very interesting story. He went to Vaikuntha. He arrived at the gates of Vaikuntha, and he was walking in, and he was wondering, where's Lord Narayan? And he saw one four-armed person looking most impressive and beautiful and decorated very nicely. So he thought, oh, this is Lord Narayan. And he went and threw himself at the feet of the person and started offering very nice prayers. But the person became very embarrassed. So I'm not Lord Narayan. I'm just the gatekeeper here. So Gopikumar himself felt embarrassed. Then he went on and met someone else, and he did the same thing. And this time it was one of the chief guards. So after a while he was feeling a little paranoid. He didn't want to keep on greeting people like this and then ending up looking silly. But finally he met Lord Narayan. And then he saw the tuft of hair on his chest. Then he knew, actually, this is Lord Narayan. Otherwise, all the males, at least, they looked the same as Lord Narayan. So even if a devotee has that sort of opulence or that type of liberation, that situation in the spiritual world, if the Lord wants that the devotee appear in the material world in some form which is more natural within this world, then the devotee will accept that. And then to have personal association, so the same idea is there. If the Lord wants, the devotee will not worry about personal association, but go away and do whatever the Lord wants, away from the association of the Lord. Now, finally, on page 44, at the bottom, reference is made to the Atmarama verse, and that's also a verse which we have included on this sheet we've given out to you. It's a very important verse. Atmarama means one who has experiencing pleasure within the self, Atmarama. So, the point there is that all different types of people who have achieved liberation of different types, and because they have achieved these different types of liberations, therefore they are self-satisfied. So all of them, all these different types of liberated souls, they still can become pure devotees. They can still become attracted to Krishna, even though they're beyond material attraction. But they can still become attracted to Krishna. Why? Because Krishna has transcendental qualities. And there are a number of examples in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's some nice examples. Who can think of one example? Who can put their hand up and tell us one? Yes? Shukadev Goswami, yes. He's the classic case who's being referred to here by this verse. He was Atmarama. He was Brahman realized. He was a Brahmavadi. But when he heard about Krishna, he became attracted. And I'm sure you all know the story. I think we told the story, didn't we, the other day in class? Yeah. He was in the womb of his mother. He didn't want to come out. Because he was saying, it's Brahman in here, it's Brahman out there. But here I'm better situated, so let me just stay here. Then finally he came out and he ran away. And how did Srila Vyasadeva get him to come back? By sending some of his students out, reciting certain verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, I have the numbers of those verses somewhere. One of them is that verse, Aho Bhakiyam Stana Kala Kutam. You may know that verse. Should I forget the number offhand? 2223 or something like that. 21023. They're glorifying Krishna. How nice Krishna is. What an amazing person is. He was so merciful to Putana, and in other ways he was very, very nice. So Sukadeva Goswami, even though he was liberated, Atmarama, when he heard those verses, he was attracted. So this is like the AA type of concluding statement that all types of liberated people can be attracted to Krishna. Because even though they cannot be attracted by anything material, Shukadeva Goswami could not have been attracted by anything material. But still he became attracted to Krishna. So what does this mean? It means Krishna has transcendental qualities. Now we come to an interesting subject which is discussed a little briefly, going from about the middle of page 45 over to the end of this chapter. And it's explaining, we've already discussed how devotional service surpasses liberation and even all types of liberation, including these other four types of liberations. But now the point is being made that Krishna is even more attractive than Lord Narayan. That amongst the different types of devotees, there are devotees on different levels, and devotees who are on the lower levels, like devotees of Narayan, they may become attracted by Krishna. But the devotees of Krishna won't be attracted by Lord Narayan. Who can think of an example of a devotee of Narayan who became attracted to Krishna? Lakshmi Devi. Lakshmi Devi became attracted, even though she is the eternal consort of Lord Narayan, she became attracted by Krishna. That's explained very elaborately. There's a very nice description in Chaitanya Charitamrita that, I don't know if you know the story. You know the story? Lord Chaitanya speaking to Venkata Bhatta. Lord Venkata Bhatta, of course, being a Sri Vaishnava, he was saying that Narayan's higher than Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya, in a very playful mood, he was saying that that's very good. But why is it then that Lakshmi Devi wanted to give up Lord Narayan and go and serve Krishna, or go and take part in the rasa dance? So, who knows what answer Lord Chaitanya gave? One of the Matajis? Some of you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita? You've read it then. I think Chaitanya said it. All right. Chaitanya Charitamrita? Any of you have it? Some of you have it? Another kind of question? How many of you read Chaitanya Charitamrita? You've read it. Huh? Okay, anyway, so what he says is that Lord Chaitanya asks, answers Lord Chaitanya. He says that, well, there's nothing wrong with Lakshmi Devi becoming attracted to Krishna, because Krishna and Narayan are the same person. So Krishna is just a feature of Narayan. So Lakshmi is the wife of Narayan, and for the wife or a wife to want to associate with her husband in his different features, like in different parts of his life, when he's working, when he's at home, when he's with his friends, when he's playing some sport, these are like different features of the life of the husband. So Vengada Bhatta says that it's only natural that a wife will want to associate with her husband in his different features and these different activities in his life. So there's nothing wrong with it. And Lord Chaitanya said, yes, you're right. Lord Chaitanya is sort of playing actually, very cleverly with Vengada Bhatta. He says, yes, you're right. That's a very good answer. But could you tell me then why it is that Lakshmi Devi was not able to do that, even though she tried? Why she was not able to actually enter into the rasa dance? So Venkata Bhatta became stumped. He couldn't give an answer. So then Lord Chaitanya explained that devotional service to Krishna is higher and you need certain qualifications. Who knows what the particular qualification is that you need?
She was attached, in that case, she was attached to all things.
Yeah, but as a result of that, she didn't have the positive qualification. She wasn't prepared to follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Yeah. So Krishna has certain qualities which Lord Narayan doesn't have. Who can tell us one of those qualities? Matajis? Come on, Matajis. How about Bhakti Manjula? Will you tell us one of Krishna's four special qualities which no one else has? Sorry? Well, they're all beautiful. Lord Narayan's very beautiful. You're right. But it's not just that he's beautiful. He has such beauty beyond any, even Lord Narayan. Incomparable beauty. That's one. One of the men. Tell us another. Sorry? Someone muttered flute. Krishna is the only person in the totality of existence who has a flute. Anyway, sorry. Yes, Krishna plays the flute so amazingly. In fact, I've actually got a description here of Krishna's flute playing. So why don't you listen to this for a minute? Oh, we've gone over time, haven't we? Anyway, I'll just read this. This is Jiva Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami. Says, this is the, I think it's Srimati Radharani, glorifying Krishna's flute playing.
So she says, with the sweet music of his flute. No, someone is speaking to Radharani. Your beloved makes the demigods and birds tremble. Even more wonderful, he makes the unconscious beings and the lifeless objects tremble also. If by sounding his flute, your master Krishna calls the cows to the water, the sweet flute sound makes the cows stunned with ecstasy, and they stand motionless with half-chewed cud in their mouths. The flute sound even makes the water become stunned, and for a moment it is no longer liquid, but hard like stone. Seeing that on a hill, with no streams or lakes, the cows have become thirsty, your master plays his flute. The flute music makes the hill melt in ecstasy, providing water for the cows. Lord Krishna calls the cows by playing their names on his flute. Do they come to him because they recognize their names in the flute music? Or are they merely attracted by the sweet sound? One time at midday in the summer, in a place without any shade, Krishna played his flute. And this created clouds that gently sprinkled water on the cows. One day, his heart melting with kindness, Krishna played his flute. The flute music made the hills melt. And Krishna left his footprint in a momentarily softened stone there. In Vrindavan, there's a number of places where Krishna's footprint, you can see it in rock. So he plays his flute, the rock melts, his foot makes an impression, then he stops playing the flute, and the rock again solidifies. So the impression of his flute is captured there. Now this is an interesting one. Sometimes he turns his flute into a boat and ferries the cows and cowherd boys across a river in it. Sometimes the sweet flute music makes the river become stunned and hardened, and then the cows and cowherd boys wonderfully walk to the other side. So this is Krishna's flute. And it's not ordinary flute playing, it's really something very, very extraordinary. So let's take a break. And we'll gather again at 25 past. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Service to any other form of Krishna. And it's even possible for devotees of other forms of Krishna to become attracted to Krishna. We only know the one example of Lakshmi, but in principle we understand that it's possible. And it's possible because Krishna has these four different qualities which the other forms of himself don't have. And we refer to his super excellent beauty and his most extraordinary flute playing. Regarding his beauty, there's one very nice quote that I have from, actually it appears, just a sec, I'll come to this in a minute, a couple of minutes. So, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's one verse, actually it's taken from Lalita Madhava, about Krishna's beauty. Lalita Madhava is a drama. Krishna's pastimes inside and outside Vrindavan. So Krishna leaves Vrindavan and goes to Dwarka. While he's in Dwarka, he's lamenting for Vrindavan and the devotees of Vrindavan. And Narada Muni, seeing how Krishna's lamenting, Narada Muni thinks that I've got to do something to help Krishna to relive his Vrindavan experience. So therefore Narada Muni puts on a drama of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes for Krishna in Dwarka. Krishna in Dwarka is the audience. And the actors are Gandharvas, demigods and demigoddesses. So they're very amazing actors and actresses. So there's Krishna Dwarka, Krishna watching. And he sees the actor, who Narada Muni, because he's so expert, he's made this actor up to look like Krishna in Vrindavan. And he really looks like Krishna in Vrindavan. So Dwarka Krishna is sitting there watching him, and he sees Vrindavan Krishna. And immediately gets up out of his seat. And he tells Uddhava, I'll just read what he says, it's from Teta. It appears in Teta. So he tells Uddhava, my dear friend, this dramatic actor appears like a second form of my own self. Like a picture, he displays my pastimes as a cowboy boy, overflowing with wonderfully attractive sweetness and fragrance. When I see such a display, my heart becomes greatly excited. I long for such pastimes and desire a form exactly like the damsels of Raja. So it was in this mood that Krishna was desiring actually to appear as Lord Chaitanya. So Krishna gets up and he starts running down. He starts running down the stairs to go and embrace the actor who's acting himself in Vrindavan. And Uddhava runs behind him and grabs hold and tells him, Lord, this is just an actor. This is just a drama. And Krishna says, oh, sorry. The thing is that Vrindavan Krishna is so attractive that he even attracts Krishna in other forms. So this is because Krishna has this incomparable beauty, even beyond the beauty of any other form of himself. Then, so we talked about his flute playing. Then, these notes I've written up on the board here, he's surrounded by devotees who possess a higher grade of love of God than the devotees of any other form of himself. And in fact, in relation to Krishna, all the rasas are fully manifest. That's why Krishna is known as, what was the term you remember? He's the reservoir of all the rasas. That is very good. Akila rasamrita murti. Akila means universal, all encompassing. Rasamrita means the ocean of all rasas. In a form, murti. So that is Krishna. So there's an interesting pastime. We've given some of the details of some of the people who take part on the board here. And in that pastime, all the rasas, both direct and indirect, are manifest in relation to Vrindavan Krishna. All the five direct rasas and all the seven indirect. We're not actually going to ask for this in any of our tests, but for your own interest, you might like to note that here we have direct rasas. Here we have Shanta. The sages were meditating. Oh, this is incidentally, of course, this is at the wrestling arena of Kamsa, and Krishna walked into the wrestling arena. So there were sages there, and when they saw Krishna, they started meditating on him. So this is Shantaras.